Hello, everybody. Today on the podcast, we are joined by a guest, Ross Lyon, joining us all the way from the United Kingdom. Ross is an online fitness coach and mentor and has some very unique approaches to how he transformed his life. We go through exercise, mindset, circle of influence, and a lot of Ross's approaches are very unique into how he's navigated the challenges in life that we all sometimes face. If you haven't yet subscribed, please hit that subscribe button now and to be notified for all new episodes. Today was a fantastic conversation and I really enjoyed and appreciated Ross's time, and I hope there are plenty of takeaways here for you as well. Enjoy the show. I originally came across your content, and coming from the fitness industry myself, also going through, obviously everyone's journey's very unique, but some of the same connection points there. I thought it would be a good chance to reach out and connect.
Here we are.
So I'm super curious as well. So new in your online journey, in terms of message, mission, what's the main reason that you've started that now?
In terms of why I'm doing the podcast and having that form of outreach, or my ultimate goal when I first got into this industry, as vague as it might sound, was just to have as much of a positive influence on as many lives I possibly can. As much as I'm not a social media person, or at least I never used to be, or not big on the technology side of things, I am well aware that podcasts have the biggest outreach in this day and age. And I think it was just a great platform to basically get my message out, tell people my story, and also just help people realize that, like, where you are right now isn't relevant to where you might want to be in 6 months, 12 months, 18 months time. And it's kind of just, the purpose behind it is I want to speak to driven, passionate, ambitious people that maybe speak a little bit about their own limiting beliefs or their own barriers, and basically how they overcame those barriers and beliefs to get to exactly where they are right now. So just creating a little bit of motivation, inspiration, and showing people that it's how you talk to yourself and how you view yourself and how you can get in your own head plays a bigger role than you might think. And ultimately, you need to be your biggest cheerleader. In a nutshell, is the message.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it really takes time to get to that point of through your own personal evolution. I think to especially even have the courage to think outside of yourself. And that's the challenge a lot of people have, and we'll dive into it a little bit deeper as we go into your backstory in terms of your self-limiting beliefs. And a lot of people are in that position, and then when they see others online who are not just thinking of themselves but thinking of others, getting their message out and doing these types of things, it can be very challenging for anyone to even flash forward, like you said, even 6 months, 12 months, to even believe in themselves that they could even be thinking of others. So I think your message is super empowering, and I think also, and I'll let you unpack this in the way that you want to, and take us to how you arrived to that point where you're now connecting with others, mission, helping others, break through those barriers. So I'll allow you to give that backdrop.
Ooh, are you wanting the whole life story then, or sort of just wrapped up in a little sort of brief explanation?
You can break it apart however you want to.
Okay, cool. So I guess for anyone who doesn't know who I am, my name is Ross Lyon. I am an online health and fitness coach. And up until, I'm 28 years old now, but for the first 23 years of my life, I was miserable, I guess, to put it bluntly. I was very negative. I was unconfident. There was zero passion, zero drive, ambition, anything there. And I guess just in terms of how I felt about myself, in terms of not just what I saw in the mirror, but my own abilities to, you know, how I was in school. I was a massive underachiever, And it just, it made me grow quite bitter and resentful of the outside world, I guess. I was definitely a sociable person. Like, I had a good number of friends. However, the downfall to that for me personally was the fact that they were all in fantastic shape. They all played high level sports. They all had like the six packs. They were all really good with women as well. And that was just, none of that was me. There was always something that I wanted. And I think just growing up, the way that I got my validation and fulfillment out of life was basically by being the class clown. So instead of pushing myself to achieve, I would basically take the piss in class just to get laughs out of others. And that made me feel good about myself for a very short space of time. Again, the negative to that was the fact that I would end up getting excluded from school, removed from class. And there was always points where as well where I wasn't necessarily a violent person, but I was always the big one out of my group of friends. And I, looking back, feel like I might have been not necessarily an easy target, but if anyone in my friend group was getting sort of picked on or someone was starting anything with them, I would be the first in line to step up. And as a result, I was frequently getting in fights at school as well. And it got to a point where end of fifth year at school, so I would have been about 16 or 17, I was basically expelled. So removed from school, kicked out. And at that point, I was like very, didn't know what I wanted out of life, had no sort of goal, purpose, ambition or anything. And I guess I just felt very crap about myself in general. And it'd only gotten worse from a younger age up until my late teens. It wasn't until about my 19, 20 years old that I started getting, not in shape as such, just getting less fat. I was always a very overweight kid, and it was always something that dragged me down. And I do think it was something that stopped me. It stopped me from having the confidence to go for anything that I wanted to do or believe in my own, let's say, the possibility of me achieving anything that I actually wanted. And that all sort of stemmed from what I actually saw in the mirror. It wasn't until I got in my first ever relationship at 20 years old, that was like my first exposure to the power of positivity, I guess. I was in a relationship with someone who was the polar opposite of me. By this point in my life, I was seeking fulfillment from drinking drugs. I was going out drinking multiple times a week. I was doing drugs at the weekend. I was working in hospitality, which really, though that lifestyle with that line of work kind of go hand in hand. So it was a vicious cycle. However, this person I was in a relationship with, she was studying at uni. She was doing a degree in nutrition. She went to the gym frequently. She paid attention to what she was putting into her body, and she was very, very positive. Whereas I didn't go to the gym. I'd never stepped foot in a gym. I didn't pay attention to anything that I was putting in my body, whether it be food, drugs, or alcohol. And it's just, that was kind of my first exposure to, right, if I, you know, this person has an amazing positive mindset and like it's pushing her to do great things with her life. And I think at the very beginning of that, it was inspiring and it was motivating, but eventually it got to the point where I was jealous, I was bitter, and I wouldn't say I was resentful as such towards her, but it was more like instead of seeing everything that she was accomplishing and doing everything with her life and taking inspiration and motivation from that and using it as a positive for me, I decided to go down the more negative route and think, you know, just not horrible thoughts, but just grow bitter. And then this eventually led to a point where insecurity is the perfect word to describe it. I was insecure about where my life was, where it was heading, and I knew she was going to do great things with hers, and it made me feel very insecure. Not just as a person, but as a man at the same time. And I think that led to a point where the relationship would end. And then from that point, that's where I'd really hit a really bad period of drugs and alcohol, where I think for 6 months straight after this, it was multiple times throughout the week, drinking, getting uncontrollably blackout drunk, drugs at the weekend, doing that until about Monday morning, and then like going to work, still not recovered from those antics, still working in hospitality at times. So not to say that you can get away with it in hospitality, but I think it's maybe it's easier. I don't know. But yeah, it was just a case of like work out, getting myself fucked over a little bit and then repeating the cycle. And it wasn't until I was 22 at the time, and basically I went through something where I thought my life was generally over. I still look back at it and call it like the worst and the best thing that's ever happened to me, because it was the most traumatic thing I've ever experienced. I spent 8 weeks generally believing that my time was up, my days were done. And I just looked back on my life and I was like, I've done absolutely nothing. It's been a waste of almost 23 years. And I guess for 8 weeks straight, I was just in a very dark place. I didn't leave my home. I was crying myself to sleep and I was in a very negative, negative, dark place. And it wasn't until literally bang on my 23rd birthday, funnily enough, I got the news that all of the things that I feared about my life being over, my days being done, it wasn't my truth. It wasn't factual. It wasn't, I didn't need to stress about anything. I basically felt like I'd been given a bit of a second chance. And I have this very vivid memory of me sitting down at my kitchen table and being like, right, I've been given this opportunity to actually, I spent the past 8 weeks regretting how I've spent my life. I've now been given an opportunity to, you know, not keep that going, to change things. And what am I going to do about it? So I wrote a pros and a cons list of everything that I liked and disliked about my life. And yeah, the cons list massively outweighed the pros list. So there was a lot I didn't like about myself or my life or where it was going or how it was being lived. And I'm trying to think, there was maybe one or two things I generally liked about it at the time. So it was like, right, okay, well, this obviously needs to change because this isn't healthy and this isn't good. So I was like, right, what's the first thing that I want to change about myself or my life and how it's being lived? And I was like, right, well, I was always a fat kid. I was always overweight. My nickname growing up was Fat Ross. So it's like, I've always had that insecurity and creative, I know. I've always had that sort of insecurity about how I looked and what I saw in the mirror. So I was like, right, okay, well, first thing I'm going to change is my physique. At this point, I'd sort of lost a lot of weight, but I still had that like skinny fat look where I'd very skinny arms and legs, but I had man boobs and a big belly, very odd shape. So it was at that point where I was like, right, okay, well, that's the first thing that I'm going to change. So like any sort of new gym beginner, I was straight onto the internet, you know, diet to build muscle, lose body fat, training program to lose body fat, build muscle sort of thing. And I kind of went from 0 to 100. It wasn't any kind of, there was no fucking about, there was no messing around. It was literally drink, drugs, alcohol, living off of like supermarket meal deals to then 5 square meals a day, chicken and rice, mince and rice, oats and whey protein, whatever it might be. I was going to the gym 4 or 5 times a week. Wasn't following a program as such. I was just going and doing something. It was, I think it was maybe 6 months into that, I hired a trainer myself, who in hindsight was not a good influence for me. Basically at the time he convinced me to sort of go down the bodybuilding route, which I was not in a place for mentally or emotionally. I'll hold my hands up like I was a grown ass adult. There was a lack of accountability or research on my side. I started to make pretty quick changes, not just within my physique, but how I was living my life. I was no longer going out drinking. That was completely cut out. I was no longer taking drugs. And because I was no longer doing those things, the people that I surrounded myself with were no longer really in my life. And the people that I once thought were friends, I quickly realized were just people that I shared that one toxic trait or hobby in common with. So I had like a much smaller group of friends that were always a positive, much more of a positive influence and lived their life in a positive way. And they quickly saw the changes within me and basically asked for help. And I was like, right, okay, well, this is what I've done. So you can just, I guess, go and do the same. And then I was maybe giving them sort of tips and tricks and advice along the way, started quickly seeing the physical and the mental changes and progressions within them. And it was the most fulfilling feeling I'd ever experienced. It made me feel great about myself, as selfish as that might be. But as great as it was to see them progressing and changing for the better, it gave me a little bit of a purpose as well at the same time, which I'd never experienced up until this point. So I kind of thought to myself, I was like, right, well, imagine if I could do this for a living. Imagine if I could actually make money doing this kind of thing. I was like, well, I can, funnily enough. And it was at that point where I was like, right, well, I'm going to get my qualification to become a personal trainer. I got that pretty quickly. Then a few months later, we went into lockdown. So there was obviously no personal training within gyms. And it was at that point, I was like, well, there are plenty of people right now that are scared and worried about, you know, basically going in the opposite direction and packing on a heap of weight and essentially fucking it. So what if I can just help these people on an online basis? So because I had such little experience at the time, basically what I did was I just started the whole social media thing. Up until this point, I wasn't big on social media. So I started an Instagram account, just was consistent with it, started speaking every day on my story, started posting like random bits and bobs. That kind of grew. And then I basically put posts out saying, look, I'm looking to take on 5 people, work with them on a completely free basis just to get some experience. You'll get coaching, you'll get your training, your nutrition, you'll get, you know, the guidance from me. You won't have to pay a cent. It's just so I can get experience. I took them on, and within that lockdown period, I got them all into fantastic shape. And it was the best feeling I'd ever experienced, the most fulfilling. And it gave me like a sense of purpose. It gave me validation. And I'd finally discovered something positive that I can get that emotion and feeling from, rather than something negative like the drink and the drugs I'd been using before. So I basically, from that point, once we, you know, lockdown had finished, gyms had opened back up, etc. Very, very quickly, because I'd used that lockdown period to grow my social media, my diary for PT was pretty much full. So I went, towards the end of the first lockdown, I had went self-employed during that, which was a bit of a ballsy move. But I'd lived off my savings just for a little bit while things were picking up. But yeah, my diary was pretty much full. So I went full pelt with PT. And I quickly realized that 1 hour in the gym is insignificant in comparison to the other, 166 hours in the week. So I was like, right, I'm a very results-driven person. I want to give the most support and guidance and education as I possibly can. I feel like I can't do that with just 1 hour a week in the gym. So that's when I made the switch from one-to-one PT to doing both, hybrid. And then eventually, it would have been August last year, I went fully online. And ever since then, it's just, I'm noticing that the people take it a lot more seriously, and I'm able to get more results, and I'm able to provide more support. But yeah, that is in a nutshell how my life has kind of went and how I've got into where I am now. It's been a, sorry, how you go?
No, that's all right. I appreciate you sharing that. So I want to go back a little bit through that journey of yours, especially to just curious, because people have these thoughts who will be in similar positions, that before this 8-week event, was there any part of you that was in that moment that was thinking like, I need to get out of this, I need to stop? Or was it just you were fully in it, not thinking of any other consequences, and it was only the event that happened, the 8-week period, that allowed you to have that reflection point?
It was only the event. Not one point. I was very much aware that I didn't like myself or my life, but I wasn't at a point where I was like, this needs to change, I'm going to do anything about it. I very much had a fixed mindset where I thought, this is my life for the future, for the foreseeable forever. I can't do anything to change that. I'm not capable of doing anything to change that. I'm not going to, you know, be successful in any kind of area. So I'm just going to, I guess, enjoy, or what I thought was enjoy, the sort of life that I'm living right now. And yeah, it was purely just that event.
And when you came out of the other side of that, where was it just intuitive for you to write a list of pros and cons, or was there some guidance? Where would you have got that idea from?
I honestly just... On you go.
It seems very simple when you just say it, but the amount of people that would sit down and create 2 lists of pros and cons It's not that intuitive to put pen to paper.
There was absolutely zero influence there. I basically got a phone call and they told me the really good news. And I was stood up in my kitchen leaning against the counter, and I had like a moment of relief. I was really happy. I was emotional. And then I just suddenly felt really inspired and motivated to just get up and do something. And it was just kind of like a thought that came into my head. I was like, right, my life needs to get better. It can only be up from here. And I just kind of thought like, well, it's only going to get better if I take action and I start actually doing something to improve the things that I don't like about it. So I guess it was just a thought of, right, what things is going to make it a lot easier for me to action the things that I don't like or I don't enjoy about myself or my life if I visually have them in front of me. And I can just maybe tackle them one thing at a time or compound them together, whatever it might be. So it was literally just a spur in the moment kind of thought. Yeah.
Yeah. It's lucky that you have that. And for anyone listening, it's just to put pros and cons, and this is even a fantastic tool to do with decision making or any evaluation process. It's so good. So tell me a little bit more about your first experience in the gym. So did you know at that time friends that were going, or did you walk in there solo and just start to navigate? Were you looking at online? How was that process for you?
So my first experience at the gym, I was still working in hospitality at the time. So I would finish my I was finished working behind a bar, and well, like Monday through till Thursday, the bar would close at like midnight or 1 a.m. and I would just go immediately after. If it was a Friday or a Saturday, I would go after the bar shut there, and then it would shut at 3, but I wouldn't get out till 4 or 5. So the reason why I was doing that was because I knew it was going to be empty, because I knew that there's only people that are in my kind of position going at that time, or people that are just absolutely on it and just up super, super early. And so I was like, well, whatever the case, it's going to be the most quiet at those kind of times. And I was still dealing with a certain level of like poor confidence at that point. I wasn't, the thought of just walking into a gym at its peak times when it's its busiest terrified me. And so a program that I got offline was just the classic sort of strength-based training one, where it's like 5 sets, 5 reps of squat, bench, deadlift. And the reason why I'm laughing is because I've got vivid memories of me pinning myself underneath a bench press at like 4 o'clock in the morning when there's nobody there, and then having to squirm out of it. But yeah, that was kind of the thing that I followed for a little bit. And then I learned a little bit more about, let's say, isolation exercises, accessory movements and things like that. And then that's kind of where I was like, right, okay, well, I don't just have to be doing bench, squat, deadlift. I can maybe do some bicep curls or a lat pull down or whatever it might be. But yeah, that was kind of my first experience, was just going at stupid o'clock in the morning just because it was quiet.
It's so funny when you say that, and I'm sure that anyone who's been in the gym for any period of time, that the moments that you were pinned under a weight or stuck in something, and I started lifting weights when I was 16. So quite a while ago now, but every moment I can even remember the exact amount of weight, the exact bench, when I've been pinned under a weight or have done something where I've been on a seated row and had a heavy stack on, and I've taken one foot on but left my hands on the handle and it's pulled me sideways across the bench. It's just a very funny memory. So when you were moving through this journey and moving away from the people that you were surrounding yourself with previously, still, I'm sure you had connections in the hospitality industry. And as you were moving away, was there any part of you that regressed or felt like that needed to go back into that to, I guess, please those people? Or did you feel that they put pressure on you when you were starting to pull away from that world?
In terms of the people that I surrounded myself with, back like in my old sort of life. So I've always been a little bit more of a, like, as much as I've always had friends, I've always enjoyed my own company, and I've always had a little bit of, like, let's say, call it a lone wolf sort of mentality, I guess, where I have zero issues being alone. I've never there was maybe a period in my younger years where I felt like I had to impress other people when I was younger in school and less mature, let's say. But I guess it up until when it reached that point, I was like, well, I'm really not arsed if people, I don't know, are trying to peer pressure me to go back into things, or they're slagging me off, they're bitching about me, whatever it might be. That it doesn't really faze me, because the most important thing to me is how I think and feel about myself and how I'm living my life going forward. So there was moments where I would maybe be around those people, but as soon as the heavy drinking got involved, as soon as there were certain substances being thrown about, I was out, I was away. And it's not just a case of, it was never a case of, oh, I think I might be tempted or anything like that. I just didn't want to be around it.
Yeah. And that's fantastic, that willpower. And you would know this, working with your clients at the moment, that circle of influence obviously can be so challenging. It could be someone who's a nurse and they're in their lunchroom and they're trying to eat a healthy salad in front of their groups. And then there's like little snickering comments, and it's all the crabs in the bucket, trying to pull them back into that world. And unfortunately, some people aren't built with the lone wolf or that resilience and willpower, and it can be super challenging for those people.
I think I have this conversation very, very frequently, and it's that struggle where people maybe don't have the inability to say no to things, and they maybe give in to peer pressure, or they have people around them, whether it be friends, family, or co-workers that do pass on negative comments. I think the most important thing to remember in those kind of circumstances is, when you have someone that is watching you trying to make a positive change in your life and, you know, improve yourself and live a better life, it's very important to remember that if someone's passing negative comments onto that, it's not about you, it's about them. It comes from a place of jealousy, bitterness, envy, and insecurity, most importantly.
100%, 100%. And then additionally to that, I remember I used to say that to these people, like, it's that fear of abandonment that a lot of people have as well, where they see you getting better, they see you changing your habits, they see you surrounding yourself with different people, and they're joint connecting the dots, and they're thinking that you're not going to have room for them in your life anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's that real fear behavior that really, I think, makes them latch out, makes them be bitter. And then obviously that turns into resentment, and that cycle goes over and over.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you were first moving into the professional world of being a personal trainer, did you start that in the gym you were training at, or where did you start to work?
It wasn't in the gym I was training at. It was basically a gym that was just opening up as lockdown was finishing. They were meant to open, I think it was, they had their opening date set for like smack bang the middle of the first lockdown. However, obviously when that was announced, that wasn't going to happen. So they basically pushed it back to, it's literally the day that lockdown is over, we're open. And it was during that sort of lockdown period, and I was playing the whole social media game. They had reached out and said, well, look, we're looking to take on personal trainers for when the gyms open up. We already have these guys working. I knew of three of them, which had been in, they had all been in the industry for a very long time. So immediately I thought, okay, well, I've already got three people that I can learn from, and I've got experience on my side there where, like, I can take that from them. And also the gym itself wasn't the best kitted gym in the city, but it was definitely up there. And it was new and it was thriving, and it was in a very wealthy place where I live. So I just kind of thought, well, there's people working there that are more experienced and knowledgeable than me, so I can learn. It's in a very wealthy place in the city, so again, I don't think I'm going to be struggling for clients as well if anyone drops off. And there's amazing equipment in the actual gym itself, so when I'm training my clients, I know that they're not just going to get the best out of me, but the best out of the gym too.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you were moving down that path, because a lot of people who are from the industry understand this, but people who aren't from the industry wouldn't understand this as much. The personal training world is quite a challenging one, because especially if you're just in it recently, that there's not too many models where you have just learned something and then you also have to try to learn sales and marketing and every other element of business instantly, versus being able to work for someone for a very long period of time, do a 4-year apprenticeship, get all the skills, understand. It sort of happens in like a hyper drive or a warp speed. How did you find the business side of it? I know you've spoken a little bit about the socials, but even in that, in selling PT, growing the business side, how did you make that transition?
So, I mean, this is the thing about the PT qualification over here is a joke. It's it might teach you the very basics. It doesn't teach you anything about actually being a successful PT or running a business or anything like that. Even the basics about human anatomy and nutrition that's involved in the course is a little bit laughable. So I think for anyone, especially within the UK, that's thinking about doing the personal training qualification, do not stop there. Like, continue your education and definitely learn more, because you will obviously only benefit from that. But what I started off pretty independent in terms of just because I was doing the whole social media thing, which a lot of people weren't willing to do here. Immediately, it was more eyes on me. I was able to get my personality out there, which I think I'm a fairly relatable person. So I think a lot of people kind of attach to that. And I was able to, I've never had an issue with selling as such. I wouldn't say I'm a salesman. I just get very emotionally invested in someone's goal. I like to see exactly what they want to achieve, why they want to achieve it, and how that's going to improve their quality of life. And if I can see that they're like, they really want that, I'm invested. And I think people kind of feed off when I get excited. When I hear people speaking about something that they're passionate about or something they want to achieve and how they want to better their life, I get excited. And I think people can sense that excitement. And they think, right, okay, well, this guy's not taking the piss, or he's not going to fuck me over anything. He generally wants the best for me. I guess it got to a point, however, where there was a bit of a bottleneck in terms of, like, as I said before, I don't know anything really about it. I'm not really good with the back end sort of stuff, in terms of like actually creating payment plans or systems with payments or funnels or anything like that. I've always been rubbish with that side of things. So there was a point where I reached out to a business mentor and I learned a great deal there. I think in terms of the things that I was good at, in terms of actual my coaching ability, my ability to get results, my certain skills, traits, and attributes that made me like a good coach and how I work well with people, and my ability to, I guess, sell, that was never really something I needed help with as such. It was more just the back end sort of stuff. So how do I scale? How do I go from being just a full busy PT to then being a thriving online coach? So yeah, I reached out to, there was a businessman I reached out to and worked with him for maybe just over half a year. So about 7 or 8 months, I guess. Learned a lot. And I got to a point where I was like, I think you've gotten me as far as you can. And then ever since then, I've just kind of been doing everything myself, and it seems to still be working.
Yeah, absolutely. And mentors play such a pivotal role. The challenge, especially in the online space now, is trying to find someone who actually, like you said, you hit that ceiling quite quickly with that person, although they would have given you some good information. Trying to find the right people for the right price point for where you're at can definitely be a challenge. And I always say to people, do some vetting and ask them plenty of questions. And what you're saying, it is a similar path to myself in a sense, because I did the same thing. So previously I did my certifications for personal training. When I did those, in 2003, I think. So we're getting older now. When I did it though, it was funny enough, and you're right, because the same thing with what you're saying about the industry for the courses there is the same here. They've just gotten shorter and shorter and shorter. and the businesses become in selling courses, not making good PTs.
Yes.
When I did it, it was 6 months full time Cert 3, 6 months full time, 5 days a week Cert 4. And the people who were running the course were also university lecturers. So they were integrated between the what's called TAFE over here. So you're getting firsthand. And that was a fantastic stepping stone, because then I did the exercise science degree the year after that.
Yes.
And then same thing, had all the fundamentals, the training, not so much on the nutrition side, but obviously had my understandings there too, but didn't have any formal training around nutrition. And then reached out to business coaches. And I reached out to a business coach. I'm not sure if you heard him. He's in the US. He's called Badros Kulian.
Yeah.
He's the owner of, it was him and a partner of the Fit Body Bootcamp. I think they've got a couple of thousand of them around the world. But originally it was when they were just pretty earlier on days. So I had the access to quite high level coaches. So these guys are like $20,000 or $30,000 a day now to spend any time with. But originally I got in lucky enough really early. And just got all the fundamentals of selling. And once I had that, the two combined, it was off to the races. I didn't go down the online path. I went down the physical location path.
Okay.
So took on a partner, built out. We had four locations, full of trainers, one-on-one group, the whole works. But yeah, very, very interesting path there. So with that in mind, how did you feel connecting with the clients? Because obviously you're a people person, you're a great communicator.
Thank you.
To make that transition away from, that's okay. So it's from because I've been in that experience as well, like the I guess in some levels, the intimacy that you develop in that rapport in that one-on-one setting, how did you find transitioning that connection to online?
Not difficult, I guess. I'm not really a believer that just, like, look, there's going to be some people that just want to do a check-in and then be left alone, which, to be honest, if I'm a client and I've got a coach, I'm exactly the same. However, there are some people that maybe need touch points throughout the week. There may be some people that need daily communication, which I've got zero issue with. I don't have a work phone or a business account on WhatsApp or anything. When I communicate with my clients, it's my personal number on WhatsApp. They can message me 7 days a week. And it's just kind of I guess it's an understanding that I do have work hours within those days, and hours where I'm not going to immediately message back unless, you know, it's an emergency right there and then, but very rarely is it. I think for me, from the get-go, I'm very transparent. I'm open and honest with my clients. I don't sugarcoat things. It's not exactly like I'm a drill sergeant, but it's very much a no BS kind of approach. And I think that because I'm authentic on social media, I don't try to... Now I am. When I first started, it was very, very PC and... Yeah, just, I guess, trying to people please, trying to say the things that people wanted to hear rather than what they needed to hear, I guess. Whereas now I'm just authentic. When I'm speaking on social media, it's like I'm speaking to one of my friends and I'm just being myself. And I think that's allowed me to attract clients that are like me and share similar personality traits and can maybe... just because of that, and they share those similar personality traits, and they're attracted to my personality, they're very open and honest. And I think something that's been told to me, not just from the people that I work with, but like from friends as well, is that it is easy to speak to me. I'm not entirely sure how, I guess it just is. But people have zero issues being vulnerable, opening up, being honest, and being transparent with me, which, if I'm being completely honest, is one of the things I absolutely love about what I do for a living, is the fact that people trust me enough to be vulnerable, to open up and speak to me about, you know, what's going on in their personal life and was maybe having a bit of a negative effect. Because I believe that coaches need to take more of an interest in what is going on in their clients' lives. And I don't mean that in a sense of necessarily texting them every single day or multiple times throughout the week, asking them to tell them about their day or anything like that, but more so just if they show that they trust you enough to open up, be vulnerable, and speak to you about something that's going on in their personal life that's maybe having a negative effect or holding them back. Yet, fair enough, we as coaches, we're not qualified therapists, counselors, or psychologists or anything like that. But if I do believe that if you're someone speaking to you about a problem, we can't promise to have the answers, but just speaking about it is going to make them feel better about the situation, therefore making the situation better as a whole. So I think at that point, it's less to do with just being a good coach and more so just to do with being a decent human being. I guess making that transition, going back to the original question, going from that transition from PT to online coach, there was no difficulty. I think, obviously, I'm not with them face-to-face, but people seem to have zero issue with telling me what's going on and communicating with me.
So it sounds like you're really moving in the right direction and making fantastic progress, making a lot of the right decisions. Do you ever feel the past version of you sneaks back in, those securities, the resentment, and you may even like the especially as you go to grow and stretch, and I know you speak a little bit about imposter syndrome, and everyone who keeps moving into these new areas continues to face these little inner voices trying to cause doubt and question them. Do you still feel that, or are you just full momentum?
Oh no, absolutely. I experience that on the daily. Imposter syndrome is something that I definitely battle with every single day to some extent. Some days are worse than others, but basically I get in my own head and I think, you know, I spent the vast majority of my life being overweight, out of shape, not taking care of my health, my fitness, my well-being in any way, shape or form. I was very negative, and I spent my adolescence and early 20s basically doing the wrong things, living my life in a very toxic and negative way. Who do I think I am helping people try to make a positive change in their life or get themselves in shape and do that kind of thing? Like, I don't deserve to be here. I don't deserve to be in this position. And I feel that it's not a case that I don't feel good enough necessarily. I sometimes still think that I'm that same person, and I tell myself that I am. And there's times where I need to really give myself a slap and think, like, that's not how you're not that person anymore. You don't possess those traits. You are the complete polar opposite, and you live your life in a completely different way. And it's sort of sometimes just taking myself out of that hole that I get myself into. And it's also, I think when it comes to, this is just limiting beliefs as a whole, collecting data and providing evidence to back what you're saying up. So for example, if I'm getting into a point where sometimes where I'm suffering from a bit of imposter syndrome, I convince myself I'm going to wake up one morning and I've got all my clients messaging me saying, Ross, no offense, but you're shit. Bye. That's obviously never going to happen, but I convince myself there is. And sometimes I just need to think, like, look, you have messages from all these people saying how you've helped them, how you've bettered their lives, and how much happier, more confident, and positive they are because of the work that you have put in. You've got zero evidence to back up that you're crap at what you do and that everyone's going to leave you. Definitely some mommy and daddy issues going on there. But you've got all this evidence that backs it up that you are, you know, at least a semi-decent coach, and you are good at what you do, and, you know, you're making people happier. So why are you getting into this mindset? And I think it's the same for any kind of, when you get in your own head about shit and there's some kind of limiting belief or barrier, collecting data and providing evidence to back that up or dispute it, I think is the most effective way of basically dismissing it.
And were these tools, the slap that you give yourself and the data collection, are they tools that you read somewhere? Do you read much? Are you listening to podcasts? How are you arming yourself with these, I guess, patterns and ways of thinking to combat imposter syndrome?
I think, I read a lot more and I listen to a lot more podcasts than I ever have in the past few years. a lot of what I think and know about mindset is more just due to my own experiences. So when it comes to imposter syndrome specifically, those methods, those tactics or tools that I use to get myself out of that hole, I never learned about that. I never read upon it. There, no one told me about it. It was more just so me kind of being like, right, Ross, you're being a dafty right now. Why do you think this? Why is your head in this kind of hole? Let's just look at, can you find anything to back up what you were thinking? And I guess it was just kind of me having a conversation with myself and basically saying, like, you've got nothing to back up what you're thinking, so why are you thinking that? I guess it's kind of the same in any kind of argument, or like you need data, you need evidence to back up a certain statement to make it factual. And there was nothing to back up what I was saying to myself. So it was just, yeah, I never read up on it, or in terms of anything mindset, I've never really, to get to where I am now and have where my mindset is now, where my head is at now, there was no sort of like reading something and went, oh, you know what, that's great, I'm going to try that. I think it was just more experience than anything else.
Yeah, that's amazing. So when you're in your day-to-day now, what is your, just say, schedule of an online PT? A lot of people who are online are always curious about, especially the online space, and how people could be just totally remote, totally online. What's the start to finish of your day schedule-wise at the moment?
So at the moment, I get up at, I hate saying this out loud, because I feel like when I say I get up at 5 a.m., it's so overdone, it's so thrown out there, and I think it's very influencer, and there's a lot of people that plaster that 5 a.m. club on social media. It doesn't matter if you get up at 5 a.m., it doesn't matter if you get up at 10 a.m., it doesn't matter if you get up at 1 p.m. What matters most is what's being done in that day as such. So for me specifically, I get up at 5 a.m. because I like going to bed relatively early in the evening, and it gives me more amount of time to get stuff done. So get up at 5, I do a half hour of cardio every single morning, just because it's routine, just because it makes me feel good, and I like getting a sweat on in the morning. Come home, I'll do like a little something for me, whether that is reading, whether that is listening to a podcast. It might even just be listening to music and doing like meal prep for the day. I'll spend 1 hour just doing something for me. And then from 7 till about midday, I'm doing check-ins or some form of client work. And then 1 p.m., I'm going to train. That'll take a couple of hours. I get back late afternoon, and then I'm doing some form of working on the business rather than in the business. If there's any other check-ins that I'm maybe might have missed or didn't have the time to do because I'm pretty set to my schedule, I'll do them in the evening. And then I'm basically doing some form of, like, I spend the majority of my time sat literally at this desk. I'm doing some form of work within the business, or on the business. And then I'm switched off by 8 p.m. Again, I'll spend like 8 till 9, maybe listening to a podcast or doing another bit of reading. And then I'm in bed by 9. Bed.
Healthy day. Healthy, productive day.
It's boring, mate. See, I always make this joke about how much of a boring bastard I am now, because I don't... Socially, I don't do a lot. I believe that quality over quantity is the approach you should take with the people in your life. So because of that, I now have like 3 friends. I don't have that many people I surround myself with. So socially, I'm not that busy. I spend the majority of my time either eating, sleeping, training, or working. And I absolutely love it. I wouldn't change it for the world. So it's a very... Considering I'm in my late 20s now, I feel like I live my life like a 70-year-old man. I don't do anything too exciting.
And do you ever feel yourself being pulled back into unhealthy eating, too much TV watching and not enough working on the business? Or do you ever get pulled into that?
So in terms of maybe TV as such, I've never been a big TV kind of person. So that's never really been an issue. Eating, on the other hand, my relationship with food has always been an iffy one, and it's actually something that I go to therapy about, and it's something that I'm working on. It's something that I'm currently learning more about as well within certain courses through university, because it's something that a lot of my clients do suffer with, and I like to have the answers to these kind of issues or these problems. So with me specifically, it's not a case of sitting on the sofa watching Netflix and, I don't know, hitting a tub of Ben and Jerry's like there's diamonds at the bottom. It's more so just if something pivotal or bad in my life happens, I will usually, I don't anymore, to be fairly honest, but in the past, and throughout my 20s, I've used food as more of a distraction from whatever's going on in my life, whatever that is. I'm angry, I'm upset, I'm stressed. There has been moments where I've extremely overate. And because I've done certain diets, extreme ones in terms of getting myself in shape for bodybuilding competitions, etc., we all know that they're incredibly restrictive and you can get on low food, and it can get to a point where your food focus skyrockets. And I think for me, I was 3 weeks out from a competition when the first lockdown was announced, and I didn't know the guy that I was with, the first trainer, the coach who was dieting me for that, I was the leanest I'd ever been, but I'd also lost a lot of muscle mass, and my relationship with food definitely took a bad turn there, where that first month of lockdown, I was just eating and eating and eating. It's something that I'm way better within. My relationship with food is drastically improving, a lot more positive, and I'm proud to be in a place now where I can actually help people improve their relationships with food. But I would say if there was any kind of unhealthy habits that I fall back into, it's not a habit as such because it's something that happens once in a blue moon. But I would say that that's probably the most unhealthy or the red flag that's within my lifestyle.
And are you looking to compete anymore, or you're not interested in that world now?
I still... So I've had this debate a lot recently with friends. My close circle of friends are all bodybuilders. They all compete. They've done very well. They've been successful. Me personally, I don't call myself a bodybuilder, but they do because I live the lifestyle. I just don't compete because once upon a time, it was... I wouldn't even say it was something that appealed to me. I just kind of thought it was something that I had to do because I was living the life and everyone else around me was doing it. So it was something that I felt that I just had to do for whatever reason. Not necessarily to fit in, but just because I'm eating the food, prioritizing my training and sleep. I'm not drinking or doing anything really social. I'm living my life like a bodybuilder, so I might as well just get up on the stage. However, what I was finding was I was getting close to like a competition date and then getting riddled with anxiety. The thought of being on stage, I've not got an athletic or competitive bone in my body. I'm just not that person. The reason why I love, I guess, bodybuilding or just training and eating is because of the external sort of factors that it gives you, or sort of the internal factors more so actually, just in terms of improved confidence, resilience, work ethic, patience, dedication, commitment, et cetera, the list goes on. If you could tell me that, right, you've got two options, Ross, where we're going to take away your physique and you're going to go back to being a skinny fat Ross, but you can continue training for the rest of your life, or you can keep the physique, but you can no longer train for the rest of your life, I'd go back to being skinny fat and training, because everything that I've taken from what I've put into my training in the gym is massively outweighs just how I look in the mirror. So yeah, I think for me, the competitive side of things, I've got the most respect for competitive bodybuilders. I think it's fantastic. The actual competing side just doesn't appeal to me. And because of that, I don't call myself a bodybuilder. I think it's disrespectful to call myself one or put myself in that bracket. My friends are bodybuilders, competitive ones, disagree. And they tell me off because you're pretty much doing everything. You're just not getting up on that stage. You're not putting the fake tan on. You're not shaving yourself, etc. So you are still one. You're just not a competitive one. Yep. Agree to disagree.
And there's some humility in that as well. And it's good to have that approach. And it's interesting that it is a natural progression for a lot of people to go into this competitive world where it's just And there could be other triggers involved, but it could be the case of like, all right, I got in this level of shape, I'm doing all this, I should and I have to go compete now, when you honestly don't.
Like,
yes. You can keep mastering your training and keep evolving and keep learning. And I'm like yourself with that. If you try to take away that time from me where I could just be alone in my own thoughts in this positive state, moving and do all these mental gymnastics and get to hang out with the best version of my internal self, I wouldn't take that away for the world. Mm-hmm. So anytime any new information comes out about training shorter, being more effective or minimal effective dose, I'm like, I do not give a shit. That's my time. I want to keep it.
Yeah. I think, man, the amount of times that I get asked the question of what's the perfect training split or whatever it might be, just for 9 out of 10 people, just go and do what you enjoy doing. Okay. Make sure that it's safe. Make sure you're doing everything correctly. But most importantly, make sure you fucking love it. Because I think that's the most important factor when it comes to training, for sure. And I think if you're ever considering like competing or getting yourself in that level shape, I would say just, I don't want to say focus less on the result, focus more on the journey, because that's so cliche. But focus more on everything you are getting, and you can apply everything you're getting outside of the physique, or inside of the physique more so, and think about how you can actually apply that to other areas of your life. So, for example, I got into the best shape of my life before even getting into this industry. And I do believe that that experience and that level of dieting and everything I took that was required to get me there, I've applied to my professional life. I also feel like I've applied it to my personal life as well. So it's not just a case of getting peeled out of your mind and having the six pack or the striated glutes or whatever it might be, and I'm whacking it on Instagram. For me, it's more so I've never been a hard worker, and that was the hardest thing I'd ever done. Imagine if I applied that level of work ethic to my career, to my profession, and anything else I want in life. If I can do that, I can fucking do anything else. So I think it's more so just taking those kind of mental and emotional positive traits from bodybuilding. Because if we look at some of the most successful people that I know are bodybuilders, because of what is required to become one and what's required to put in, what you have to put into it. And if you can take that and apply it to everything else, you're laughing. You're gonna do very, very well.
Yeah, and continuing to work at things year after year, constantly putting yourself, and you're right, there's so many applicable things to real world success. At some point in whatever industry or whatever, wherever you're pointing that world or that energy more so, the things like you said, you've got planning, you've got discipline, you've got all these traits, but you've also got measurable results. You've got a place and a time where you're going to be tested in the real world and put yourself in a position where you get to assess, make changes, improve. There's so many great things that can come from it. I think the part of the challenge, I think, with that world now is that it's always, or not always, I shouldn't say, quite often running in alignment with social media.
Yes.
Whereas I feel if people were just competing without the attention associated with social media, they would gain so much more from it.
I agree. No, I completely agree. And it's just the way the world now, I guess, where I see it a lot in the gym that I'm training now, where there's a lot of young people practicing their posing and getting into the lifestyle and saying that they're going for this competition, etc., which I think is fantastic. If it's something that you really want to do, go for it. You just need to make sure that it's for the right reasons, because there's definitely people deciding that they're going to compete or going to live that life when it's purely for Instagram clout. And it's just for the likes, it's just for the validation on social media, when they're maybe not aware of what's actually required and the sort of, honestly, the negative effects that are going to come from it as well. Because if you're someone who has an emotional attachment to food, it's going to make that worse. If you have a poor relationship with food, it's going to make that worse. If you like I see this a lot with females as well. If you're someone who maybe doesn't have the best relationship with their body or what they see in the mirror, and they're very uncomfortable with putting on a little bit of weight, if you want to be a competitive bodybuilder, that's something that you need to be comfortable with, because as soon as that competition is done, is finished, or that diet is done, and you go in the opposite direction, you want to get bigger and stronger, you're going to gain body fat, and that's the reality of it. So I think a lot of people jump into it, which again, if it's something you really want to do, fucking ace, go for it, respect. But at the same time, I think, and this is, I think, a coach's responsibility as well, you need to have that conversation either with the coach or the coach with the client or with yourself in general, and just be like, right, okay, I know I've got these triggers. I know I've got maybe got these issues or these things that I could be working on. How is bodybuilding, or not even bodybuilding, how is competing going to affect that, whether it's in a positive way or in a negative way?
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, just understanding that you can take it all the way. You don't necessarily, like you said, you don't need to push yourself into anxiety. Mm-hmm. And then again, that's where, like, if you can work in the shadows and you can do the lone wolf thing, and you can test the water a lot better than if you posted on social and taken that acceptance, and then you're forced into continuing to do things that may not be you, because it is important to try things and get a little bit of exposure and see if things you like or you don't like. But yeah, I think that's always an interesting world to me, the competition world. So I just wanted, before we start to move in the direction of ending, I just want to see if, and it could be a long answer and it can be a bit of a break apart for yourself, any guidance or any frameworks, because you've been through a huge journey of your own, and you seem to intuitively navigate it quite well with a lot of your own self-guided tools. If there are people listening who are in really tough spots, and again, this isn't therapeutic advice, or like you said, it's not psychology or anything like that, but just in terms of practical steps where you think someone could start to move themselves in the right direction, or it could be just taking a list down or anything like that, do you have any ideas or suggestions around that?
I would say, first, get crystal clear on exactly what it is you want to change. I think people are very, very vague about what their goals and their ambitions are, in terms of, oh, like, I just want to be happy, or I want to be successful, I want to make money, or I just want to be, I don't know, I want to be fit, or whatever it be. The more specific you can be with your goal, the more likely you are to be able to reverse engineer that goal and give it a time frame or a timeline, and then work backwards from that and actually identify what the actionable steps are towards achieving that goal. I also think, I'm not really one for manifestation or positive affirmations as such. I do believe that, like, in a world where 9 out of 10 people say that you can't, you need to be that fucking 1 out of 10 that says you can. So you do need to be your biggest cheerleader. You need to be your biggest reinforcer, and how you talk to yourself and how you view yourself plays a bigger role than you might think. So something that I talk a lot about is trying to, if you currently have what's called a fixed mindset, which is basically your mentality is you think that your skills, traits, attributes, abilities are fixed. They can never develop, they can never progress, it can never change. It's essentially the thought that where you are currently in life is set in stone. It's never going to change. You're never going to improve. You're never going to get better. And this is how you're going to live your life for the rest of your days on earth, let's say. I like to talk about trying to develop that to a growth mindset, which is basically the polar opposite, where you think where you are right now, along with hard work, patience, commitment, you can develop these skills, these traits, these abilities over time. And if you're willing to put in that effort and that graft to get to where you want to be, it's very much possible, but you need to understand it's going to require patience. It is going to require effort. It's also just in terms of how you view failures, rather than taken aback by them. You see them as lessons learned, and it's just being a little bit more open to new experiences and opportunities. I think just how your perception of things as well is a massive influence in terms of working towards something as well. You can either see, I'm a big believer in trying to see the silver lining in every situation. Doesn't matter how shit it is, Doesn't matter how crap it makes you feel about yourself or how much of a negative role it might have had in your life. Try to just see the silver lining, and rather than spending too much time sort of crying about it or being upset about it, give yourself 5 to 10 minutes of basking, I guess. Let yourself grieve, let yourself experience a negative emotion. But as soon as that 10 minutes is up, right, what are we going to do to change this? How are we going to make the situation better? What are we going to do to basically improve the situation? So I think just rather than being as vague as fucking saying, yeah, change your mindset to a more positive one, just pay more attention to how you speak to yourself and how you view yourself. Try to be more open to failures and new experiences. Get super specific on what it is you want to achieve. Reverse engineer that. And then from there, you'll be able to take actionable steps towards working to that goal. Doesn't matter how small it is, doesn't matter how large it is. Start very basic and then work your way up.
Awesome, man. There's so many powerful little messages within that whole message. So if anyone's listening to that, they could definitely listen to that a couple of times over and think of and pull a couple of things, different things each time. So what we'll do now is I'll just get you to let everyone know, because this has been such a great chat, where people can find you online, Insta, YouTube, podcast, all of the above.
So on Instagram, my handle is @madebylion, and lion is spelled L-Y-O-N. My email is madebylion@gmail.com, and my YouTube is @made__. All the links to all of that is in my Instagram bio as well.
Awesome, man. And I'll link everything up as well. But I really appreciate you sharing the time, connecting on the time difference between here and there as well. So that was awesome. Thank you so much for today. I really appreciate it.
That's quite all right, man. Thank you very much for having me. This is a first guest appearance on someone's podcast. So it was a very enjoyable one as well. So thank you for having me.